When you'd honestly prefer they keep it as Christine Sinclair Place. It's That's So MLS.
Hell yes.
A North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
What is up, my friends?
Oh my, what a match we had. We had soccer at BC Place in December, but it was at Christine Sinclair Place, the final match of Sinclair's legendary career with the Canadian women's national team. That was a tremendous occasion they put together last night. The speed they slapped together this tour, at first I think that all of this didn't really, especially because she is playing next year, but I think all of this didn't really seem real to me until like half an hour before the game. And I was like,
yeah,
wow, this is happening. This is taking place.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I think it's, there's a bit of a mix of the, like, I don't want it to be happening, so I'm just going to refuse to believe it kind of thing. But I have to admit, I just watched the highlights again, and it's hard not to get a little choked up when she goes off. And, you know, well, obviously we can talk about the game and everything, but I just, the thing that stood out to me the most is, like, obviously the crowd is there for her. The tour is for her. But just how loved she is, you know.
That's
across
right.
All our teammates, you just see such genuine care and love. And from, you know, the Australian players as well. Like, it just, her reputation precedes her. And there really hasn't ever quite been somebody like her, both in terms of, obviously, her goal-scoring prowess, but just how she carries herself as an elite athlete.
Right.
Is... You know, I think somebody who is good-humored but also kind of plays the cards a little close to the chest. And in this day and age of celebrity and sports celebrity, that's kind of a rare thing. And just all class, it was definitely kind of a hard thing to watch her go off for the last time. Although, as you mentioned off the top as well, it is nice to know, like, she's not fully retired from the sport just yet. So this is just the ending of one chapter, but it means that there's another one yet to go. I don't know if that's comfort to anyone.
She was notoriously, throughout her career, like, you know, a little, not necessarily somebody that was into hero worship in the least. And, you know, in her book, she said that she kind of wanted to just stealth retire.
Mm.
She just like the first Tom Brady retirement, she kind of wanted to see. Like, she was like, sometimes I think about just saying, that's it. And then that's it. She also talked about the fact that that a male player of her caliber would have the option to retire from the national team and play professionally for a while and not have to, like, focus on splitting the time to a certain degree. The Olympics is coming up. I'm sure it's going to hurt to not be a part of that, but at the same time, the Olympics always interfered heavily with NWSL schedules.
Yeah.
So that was a part of it. And again, just talking about not loving being a part, you know, having the spotlight put on her. But she had said that one of the things that she enjoyed about it was being able to get her nieces involved. And so that was when I saw... When you have Erin McLeod getting recognized, amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Sophie Schmidt getting recognized, who could, in some senses, did have her own game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see Sinclair running out there with her nieces, she looked like she was having a blast, and that almost seemed like one of her most happiest moments of the whole thing.
And I think so, and I think that's kind of such a perfect symbol of it is. I think she's always been, it's been clear where her heart lies and what matters to her. And it isn't most of the things that are surrounding soccer. And, I think it was obviously important for her to do this, like all things, on her own terms. And it felt like last night that was very much the case. It was a nice thing for the fans and a chance for them to say goodbye, but it did still feel like something that, you know, Christine Sinclair was comfortable with. The right kind of very, very public, large-scale send-off.
They aired the Thank You Sinclair video beforehand that had a bunch of people from around the country, and also Melissa Tancredi in a moment that I'm glad they didn't have a cry camera on me as they had on Christine Sinclair. They had a little inset cry box that zoomed in on her face.
Oh, they did you dirty.
But that was really nice. The match was played quite well. It was a one goal from Quinn, who hit in the rebound after Kadisha Buchanan hit the crossbar with a header. I believe that was from a ball from Sinclair.
It was a flick on from her. Also, like, it's been a minute since we've seen any Canadian team just score, like, a poached header off a rebound in the box. I liked that a lot. Just a opportunistic goal. It feels like, you know, we've been a team that kind of gets caught flat-footed in those types of situations. So I was also, when Quinn headed it in, was just in the right spot and onside. I was like, hell yeah.
Sinclair hasn't scored this calendar year. And obviously holding the goals record. I think a lot of people wonder whether or not she would be kept on until she got one or as long as she wanted or what the scenario was. And I was a little surprised when her number came up on 58th minute.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce Arthur of the Toronto Star noted that the 57th minute is 12 minutes into the half. Mm. It also kind of felt to a certain degree that by having the handoff be between her and Schmidt.
Yeah.
And, you know, having the Schmidt wear the armband, it kind of like, there's a reasonable, I'm sure nobody felt, you know, shorted out, but it's, you know, where's the thank you Schmidt commercials, the Canadian Tire commercials. You know, to a certain degree, I feel like she could deserve them as well.
Yeah.
And she got a full half hour as team captain to end her career. And I thought that was also special.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, like, you know, for Christine Sinclair, I think I heard one of the commentators kind of say, like, you know, it was either going to start her and let her just run and gun for an hour and just give them hell, or play the final 15 minutes probably. And I if they gave the choice to Christine Sinclair, which I'm sure they asked her input, that was probably her desire as well, is to just go out and play freely for 60 minutes rather than be a substitute off the bench for the final last little bit.
That makes sense.
I mean, obviously, speculating. But I mean, it feels like somebody must have gone to Christine Sinclair and been like, all right, what do you want to do here? What's the final act going to be? Are you coming on as a super sub, or do you just want to go out and play a game for as long as you can?
I believe somebody said on the One Soccer broadcast, like, did you want Christine Sinclair's last minutes for the national team to be, like, coming off with a hamstring cramp?
Yeah. yeah.
And we saw Megan Rapinoe.
I was going to say, for Rapinoe, it was, you know, obviously not how it was written up. And very unfortunate, very early substitution. So
it's an athletic as much as I think a lot of this presentation was stage presentation, and stage presentation that was managed quite well. With the, you know, the 190 youth players to match the gold title total and members of the 2012 bronze medal team and whatnot. Like, it was very tasteful, very, very nice moment. This is Celine Dion at the end, so good. But it was also a very real match that was played competently by both sides. This was no testimonial.
No. No. It was a good match in the end, too.
We will now look ahead to, for, you know, the Canadian women's national team looks ahead to the Olympics Sinclair looks ahead to one more year with Portland. And we look ahead to a packed MLS week leading heading up to MLS Cup. A lot has happened, both in terms of games and some developments since we last talked.
There have been developments. There's been games. We are now down to the final two, of course. I think one thing that's kind of always interesting around the playoffs is that every team that's out immediately starts overhauling rosters and making contract decisions and things like that. So for me, it's kind of weird to be like trying to keep your finger on the pulse of, you know, conference finals and semifinals and all of that good stuff, while you also have a bevy of teams making not insignificant moves and decisions. Just a couple.
The offseason is almost half over.
Yeah. No, truly it is. Like, there's teams that are sort of well on their way, or at least they have made their decisions about who's out. A couple of ones that have just stood out to me, and I think there's too many to run through all of it, but of course Sebastian Blanco now has left the Portland Timbers. We also know that Nico Lodero is very, very, very likely out at Seattle. Obviously, two key pieces for two Cascadia teams now having to move on from those key players. I saw today Orlando has parted ways with Pereira, which I was kind of surprised by, their captain and DP signing. I believe he's been with the club for about 4 years, and a really big piece of Orlando being good. So that one will be interesting to see. And of course, they still have not yet, I think, locked down their coach. DC United.
Saw the Twitter account.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I saw the Twitter account seeing the game talk about essentially how that Pereira was overlooked as a to some degree because he was sort of set as a DP striker and not, or thought of as a striker and thought of in terms of his performance, when his value, as you said, was like towards the team being good, towards being that more of a midfield engine and making sure that the plays happened.
Yeah. Well, he certainly didn't rack up the goals, but when you look at the assists and like key passes and all of that, I mean, he's very much, yeah, a playmaker for them. So be curious to see how Orlando wraps things up and what their thinking is there. I mean, with his age, you know, I think he's probably just past his prime, and it probably makes sense to move on, but it certainly leaves a big hole for that team that I think he was a really key part of their new, again, like, competent identity. DC United have cleaned house yet again. 9 players' options were declined. So I think we can expect to see some pretty significant changes over at that club. What was the other one? New England locked down Thomas Chancelet from Racing Club from Argentina. So he will be staying with the club, which feels like probably some good news for Revolution fans who have not had a hell of a lot to celebrate in the last few months. To have, obviously, Chancelet is just a fantastic player.
Whitecaps re-signed Sebastian Berhalter today.
Saw that.
Who has been,
good one.
You know, working pretty well. He was one of the players that they were negotiating with. I think they want to try and look to bring back the players that were on loan, including Larea. They have not renewed the option for Russell Tybert, but have said that they are interested in talking with him, maybe about a contract on reduced terms.
Yeah, I knew eventually we'd have to get around to talking about old Tybert. It makes me a bit sad. I feel like he's always just had such an unfair shake from Whitecaps fans, and he's been a stalwart warrior for the Whitecaps and a bit of consistency amid many sea changes. And is he, you know, the most lights-out, incredible MLS player? No. But I think it would be a real shame to not see him at the club next year. But I also think it's a key decision time for both the club and for him, that if he's going to move, probably next season is the time to do it. If he wants, say, a second part of his career or to reinvent himself as something else at another club. I think there's a lot of MLS teams that can certainly use that kind of athleticism and mentality. And, you know, as good as Russell Tybert has been, he's always going to give you a certain amount. It really feels like he plateaued at the Whitecaps, and maybe a change of scenery. Like, I guess what I'm saying is I'd rather see him go to, like, DC United and play, you know, start matches than sort of just slowly fade away at the Whitecaps playing, you know, a few hundred minutes a season or only getting trotted out for the Canadian Championship and things like that. Kind of what his role was this season. I just feel like he's a good enough player that he deserves to be starting, and I think there's other MLS clubs where he could maybe... you could make that argument, but... yeah, we'll see. It's kind of a weird one to think about, a Whitecaps without Russell Tybert, but be interesting to see how that one develops.
In numbers don't matter, and the points are just in rules are just suggestions. News, Athletic reports that Inter Miami is finalizing a deal with Luis Suarez.
Oh, cool! Interesting.
Nothing is completely sorted on what designation Suarez will hit the cap at, sources say, whether it's a DP or not, because they are doing it and they don't really, they don't care. I find it hard to believe that anybody is going to kick up, anyone is thinking too hard about exactly what will enable them to do it. It's, they've figured out what they want to do. The justification will come later.
Imagine the universe, though, where they accidentally have too many DPs again and Messi has to go play for Charleston Battery.
Oh, yeah.
Or Las Vegas Lights or something. You know, like...
We've talked about Messi doing a tour. Who was it that says... somebody on Twitter had a great joke where there was a translated quote where he allegedly said that MLS was minor league. He did literally, Lega Menor, but people were kind of suggesting that it has a different connotation to the audience that he was speaking to at the time. But somebody joked, Messi has never said this about USL.
I love it. Yeah, well... Like I said, I'm just waiting for that Luis Suarez, Giorgio Chiellini rematch. I can't wait for it.
That would be at PHX Rising Nation. So congratulations for that joke. Frank Klopas is back at the Chicago Fire. That's the other one. He was a former Chicago Fire coach until 2013. Was at Montreal until 2015, and I think was spending some time as an assistant. He's back
again.
why reinvent the wheel when you can just do it? Were 2013 to 2015 particularly good Chicago Fire years?
Not really. I mean, what's our comparison here? The last 7 years? Chicago Fire is always such a head scratcher, aren't they? Like, I feel like they've got two modes. They've got, let's just redo the thing that we've tried already and decided we didn't like, or the, let's go in a completely opposite direction but not fully commit to it. Those are the two Chicago Fire approaches, and this one seems to be we're just going to try this thing again, even though we've decided multiple times it wasn't all that successful. Now somehow, like, third time's a charm. I wish him the best of luck. I'd love to see something different from the Fire. I'm hopeful now that with that signing in place, it means that there'll be some interesting player decisions made, so we get to see what Frank Klopas Chicago Fire 2.0 looks like.
When we spoke last, we were discussing the pair of referee based incidents,
mm-hmm,
that caused some consternation involving Cincinnati. I don't know that we knew that it was MLS Defender of the Year Matt Miazga. at the time. But he has been he was suspended for 3 games, which had Cincinnati made the MLS final. Spoiler alert: they did not. That would have kept him out of it. This was allegedly because he had gone into the. We talked that he had been yellow carded in the shootout, which would have resulted in a suspension. It been in regular time. Oh, it did count as a second yellow, but it didn't count as a red because
it did count as a suspension because it was an accumulation of 3 yellows. But he wasn't sent off because it was only his second yellow. But the second yellow, yeah. There was a lot happening with the cards.
and he went in. So the allegation is that he went in the room. He wasn't supposed to be in the room. The coach has complained on his behalf that the Referees Association and the statements about it have made it out that he was doing so aggressively. You know, he was like, oh, he wasn't walking in there in his cleats. He had a pizza in his hand or something like that. Like trying to basically.
Yeah, pizza's not aggressive. It's the everyman's food.
Trying to I guess take some issue with what the findings were. What was your take on that?
I get
on how that situation unrolled.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, I saw like some conflicting reports about the details and the nature of exactly what and how occurred. However, importantly, I think the league policy he violated was entering the official's room, which you are not allowed to do and carries automatic suspension. So it sucks if there were details that were embellished or maybe not fully understood. However, I think people know by now I'm kind of a... If we can have a by-the-book way, like, you can't... It doesn't really matter if you're slinging pizza and you're just like, hey, guys, just wanted to have a little chat. If you're not allowed to do it, you're not allowed to do it. Violates a league policy. What league in the world are you able to go after a match, after you've been carded and disciplined already, to go and approach officials and enter the officiating room after a match? Like, that's... This is not a, like, oh, I didn't know what would happen. So I also don't fully buy the, like, oh, well, it wasn't aggressive. I mean, in the same way that there were protestations about the second yellow being like, well, I was blowing kisses to the fans saying I love you. And you're like, we all know exactly what you were trying to do. And it's not a great story. So it sucks, but especially the way that he conducted himself in that match. I'm fine with all of it because I think he knew exactly what he was doing and just lost control. And even if he just went in to have a friendly voice in a regular tone, you're still not allowed to do it, and it carries automatic suspension. So that's what he got himself. And I think, as I'm assuming we'll talk about in a second, the league has been very clear that they will make an example out of you, and they'll tolerate a certain amount on the pitch, but they'll still come after you after the fact. But if you're violating policies after a match has ended or messing with the referees, they're really going to make you pay for it. And I don't disagree with that approach, because imagine if you don't do this, then after every match, you're going to have players trying to get into the officiating room and argue every little decision in detail.
No need for Hawkeye to find out whether he crossed the line on that one.
No. No. You know, and like the pro came out and apologized for getting a key decision wrong in the Sporting Kansas City match. Of course, it didn't matter about anything, but, you know, Peter Vermees can't go storm into the officiating room and challenge that decision. We know that. It's just a basic rule. So I think Miazga really let himself down in this moment.
I think it's a team management issue in terms of, like, who is in charge of communicating these things, that there is a concern.
Yeah.
You try after the fact to have the coach, you know, litigate what he thought wasn't reasonable about it. It's like, that's, if there was an MLS part of that issue where there should be a more clear reporting relationship for people to get explanations on stuff, then that's also like maybe something worth thinking about. But it feels like the not just he should have known, but like that should have been really clear that his team wouldn't tolerate it, and that's not what we've heard.
Yeah, and also like, and referees don't owe you a fucking explanation, believe it or not. Nowhere is that written. Like, yes, we'd all like it, and I understand frustration when decisions happen that players or coaches don't understand, but there is a pipeline for communication after matches for the coach to follow up with and the coaching staff to be able to follow up with. It's not a, I'm going to go chase down the referees so they can personally explain to me why I received a second yellow. That's it's just not their fucking job.
Speaking of people who speak to referees in a normal, regular, non-aggressive way.
Totally.
Vanni Sartini, who we last saw being escorted off the pitch and taking a moment to turn back around and holler a little bit more before being, having the arm put around his torso and pulled in. It turns out that this act of attempting to re-enter the field, as well as his comments after the match, landed him an additional 5 games for 6 games total.
Yep.
Suspension to start the next year. From what you say, I feel that you're probably not too angry about this.
No. I mean, it's a lot. And honestly, the day that it was announced, I was really starting to be like, it's been so long now. And they did the Miazga decision first, where I was like, okay, Vanny's thing happened after that. But it's been a couple of weeks now. I'm like, if they don't announce it soon, like, I just don't think they're going to follow. I'm like, have they just forgotten? They had not forgotten. There was also a $20,000 fine attached to that, as well as an order to complete league behavioral assessment. I'm so desperate to know what that assessment actually is. But, yeah, it's significant. I do think it's fair. I think it was clear that the comments Vanny made, he provided some context for. But, again, if you let something like this slide, you open up the potential for much worse to occur. And I just don't think you can be surprised by it, especially for a head coach. You know, the fact that there were multiple violations of league policy in the same match, like, that's the thing that did him in. And it's also not the first time he's been disciplined by the league. And again, I think they've been pretty clear all season of, like, you know, we'll warn you a certain amount, but then after that, we're going to throw the book at you. And they threw the whole book at Vanni Sartini. I was glad to see, after the decision was made, there was a short statement from him basically just saying, like, he's looking forward to completing the behavioral assessment and doing whatever else the league requires of him, and that was it. And I think that's the right call, is you take this one on the chin and you change your ways. I know I did see some fan reactions on Instagram, and people were pretty upset by it, thinking it's way too much and it's too harsh. But I find it very hard to believe that if it was any other coach, you know, if this was Brian Schmetzer, we'd be out for his blood, and would settle for nothing else. So you have to have the same standard even when it's your guy, and we love the passion. I just felt like that whole thing was really over the top, and he had a very weak case ultimately. And it's again, the multiple violations thing, like, it's clear that they're really going incident by incident, and they've been consistent in that. So it's a lot, but
I'm going to a little bit, I agree with you. And I think especially when we talk about coaches, we should really be looking at, And this, the behavioral training is, it sounds like a joke, but I don't really think that we should tolerate coaches at any level you know, this stereotype of a coach blowing their top, you know. I go to college games and I see people, you know, have to get reminded by the referees over and over again to, you know, in basketball to stop with the waving of the hands, stay in your technical area, this kind of stuff. That's definitely something that I don't have any particular tolerance for.
Yeah.
If there is a concern around consistency, I can begin to understand the concern around consistency because there were people who immediately compared it to the three games that Kai Wagner got for the racial abuse of Bobby Wood.
Yeah.
In sort of like comparing it negatively, I went and looked for some comps. So Jermaine Jones got 6 games for touching a referee in 2016. Clint Dempsey took the notebook out of a referee's pocket and ripped it in half in 2015. I understand was a an incident of some notoriety with the Sanders, because I guess it happened in the Open Cup against the Timbers.
I remember that one. What was the punishment? Because I don't think he got a card in the game.
Three games. Thanks to Neil McEachern for that.
Excellent. Love that deep
that
dive.
Little nugget.
As you were mentioning incidents, I was like, are we going to talk about the Clint Dempsey thing? There you go. You had it. You had it in your back pocket.
And it's hard to – we almost kind of forget that it happened this season. But the Red Bulls player Dante Van Zier, who got – 6 games.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily, my day job involves courtroom reporting, and that deals with the principle of similar offenses for similar offenders in similar circumstances. Unfortunately, that always leads up with somebody, having to, you know, compare which horrendous thing is, you know, 0.5 degrees worse than another horrendous thing.
Yeah.
So I don't necessarily want to be like, you know, try to compare a racial abuse incident to a referee incident, because I think that...
Yeah, that's a losing game for everyone.
let's not. We should not be tolerating racism. And I think that the league should really be, you know, making sure to focus on that. But so if you were looking at... if you were looking at Sartini versus the Wagner incident, you could also at the same time look at Sartini versus the Van Zier incident, which was the same amount of
or look at the Bruce Arena incident, and he got fucking fired. So
that's a great point. And you could also look at, okay, well, you had a player who actually touched an official, got the same amount. But at the same time, Sartini had a history, as you said, a previous history, which is something that in the criminal system, if you thought of it that way, is taken into account. Three games for somebody who did something pretty bad, but didn't physically touch an official. What I think I'm trying to get at by linking these 5 incidents together is that I do kind of understand the idea it's scattershot.
Sure.
It gets into be a losing game to try and compare which things are worse or not. But you know, Van Zier got 6 games, Kai Wagner got 3. Why?
Yeah.
Wagner's leaving the league? I don't know. There is a feeling, and this is where I kind of will make fun of myself for making the crime comparison, is that I feel like it's reasonable to feel that there is no particular rhyme or reason or no clearly enunciated sense of precedence. There is an in the moment feeling of what we have to do to show our displeasure in lack of condoning of this conduct, and that's what they did, and it's conduct that shouldn't be condoned. So,
and in fairness, the league policy usually just states it's at the disciplinary committee's discretion. So it kind of basically says, yeah, we can make it up on the fucking spot if we want to. And I'm not, and I agree with you. Like, it would be nice. It would be nice to have a flow chart and some consistency and know exactly what it is. And I think there's probably good reasons why that doesn't exist or isn't publicized. And I just think that, like, when I see people's reactions to this kind of stuff and they get like, well, this is why this is a joke league. Like, you'll find the same comments under every decision, every game of every league on the planet. I guarantee you that. Everybody thinks when something goes down. I mean, what was it? Newcastle and PSG, was that the team that was given the ghost handball shout?
Right.
Like, biggest stage, soccer stage on the world. You have a clear and obvious error. You know, I don't buy it. I think that, yeah, I've been in that place as a soccer fan where you hit the roof anytime one of your guys goes down. But I think if we're all being honest here, like, yeah, it's frustrating not to have the consistency. I get why Whitecaps fans are upset because there were things in the game they disagreed with. However, as the coaches who are paid, who work for the league, who agree to all of these workplace policies, if they violate them, they also know that they will be disciplined. So I that's where my sympathies are rather limited. And it's, you know, hearing especially coaches, I think have a different responsibility. And when they talk about like, oh, you know, well, I have such great respect for the officials, of like, well, your actions need to match that. And it needs to match it when the referees get it wrong as much as when they get it right. It can't just be all hell breaks loose because you felt some calls didn't go your way. Because that really would that would set a much worse precedent than, you know, one coach got two more games suspension than another coach for quote-unquote similar incidents. Again, I think in their decision they said it's multiple violations of league policy in the same game. So that alone could account for that. If maybe somebody did something that seems worse, but that was one violation. Vanny had three, so he gets two games, or, you know, 1.33 games per incident. Like, I don't know the math either, but I think that we would all feel pretty shitty if it was a coach on a different team who was just given a free pass. And certainly if that happens, then I think there's reason for healthy debate. But we're not talking about things that aren't disciplined versus things that are. When we're talking about degrees, again, I feel like it is kind of splitting hairs, and like, I don't know what that perfect system is. And even if it was public and there was a rubric available, everybody would disagree with it anyway. So
that's a good point.
You know,
team management team. I like the last one. I'm also going to say that this is a team management issue because you have Matias Laborda also picking up a one also for re-entering the field of play.
Yeah.
And I think that obviously Vanny was the talking point, but I wouldn't be particularly pleased with how the Whitecaps writ large handled themselves in that situation. And you can clearly see that if you can't in any way say that they didn't condone that.
Yeah.
You know, his coach got suspended for the same behavior. You can't say in any way that he was told that you shouldn't be doing that. Or not, sorry, I can't say it anyway. Obviously, he probably was told that. But, like, you know, the way that all of those players acted, there is a certain element of leadership to that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that it does matter. It does matter. Again, there's ways to follow up with it. And at the end of the day, we all know it has no effect on the decisions. Like, you screaming at a referee or marching back onto the pitch, the referee's not going to be like, oh, you know what? Well, now that you're screaming at me and have re-entered the field of play, I am going to take a second look at it. Like, just if you completely disagree, just walk away from it and let things shake out how they should. You know, and I get it. It's thankless, but it's like, would you rather have the exact same decision stand and have it be thankless, or would you also rather be missing your head coach for the first six games of the season because they lost control of themselves? You know, I think that it's, if you look at it from that way, I think it, you just have to have a don't cross the line moment, yeah. and just be like, it feels like a pretty low bar as a standard, and it could get real messy if they're not nipping these things in the bud.
The playoffs have reached their, do you have any, before we do that, do you have any news?
I got nothing. I was just saying, I mean, despite all of that, I think there's actually been very few sending offs or disciplinary things in the game since we last talked.
That's true. We had one, we had in the quarterfinals or conference semifinals, if you want to brand them that way, for whatever reason, you got a second yellow in the Orlando game.
Right.
Orlando, I was going to say that we are left with two teams, and we have been at the point here where some very great teams in Seattle were eliminated in the last two rounds of the.
Oh, that was excellent. Wasn't ready for that.
Of the things, there's lots of in Orlando is certainly one of them, where the Orlando of Columbus game where. You know, Yancey gets the second yellow for a trip on Rossi during a break. But Orlando had like two or three or four amazing chances after that.
Yeah, yeah.
They really could have won there.
Yeah, I think this was the round where all my predictions started to break down. I think I had everything right except for one, which was Columbus going through. And actually, this might have been the first game that I got wrong. And then my bracket broke significantly after this. But yeah, for as good as Orlando's been this season, and I feel like they've kind of been like the sleeper hit where they've just been quietly very good and people haven't been paying attention, despite Columbus's domination after this, you know, I thought Orlando played really strong, and I felt like there was definitely a lot in it. And then of course once the second yellow comes for Schlegel, it's like, you know, the crew then goes to the bench, does their changes. Schulte just standing on his head, doing some just incredible reaction saves to deny Orlando's chances that they had. And it's, I think it's not long after Schlegel's card that Christian Ramirez comes on. And then he eventually gets the go-ahead goal. And then Cucho, of course, has his as well from just about halfway mark.
Don't see that too often, the hockey empty net goal.
Yeah, yeah. You know, he's lethal, that guy. He reminds me a lot of Rui Diaz. Just like if he decides he's doing it, there's very little you can do to stop it. And of course, Galese is way out of his net. Playing up to try to make that last ditch play for Orlando, which you have to do. So I feel like it's fine to leave the net empty, and you know that a guy like Cucho might have a hit from there. A really good season from Orlando overall, but the crew just looks so stacked in this game, and obviously we saw that play out in the subsequent game as well. Yeah, funny, after this game, in my notes, I just saw the Cincinnati-Columbus conference final should be a scorcher. Yeah, that one didn't disappoint.
Did not disappoint. Cincinnati-Philadelphia. Cincinnati got there from, this is another one where it's like, I feel like this is where we're getting to the point of having a lot of teams that, you know, just as well could have been in the final. Philadelphia looked great. It was 0-0 all the way through the second half stoppage. Mascara scores in.
Yeah,
it gets a score, a scores off of a ball that's headed down to him, and that was part Cincinnati being great. Unfortunate on Philadelphia. Sporting Kansas City had their run that ended by Herrera.
One thing I wanted to just quickly add about the Cincinnati Philadelphia game, I thought that was like one of the best playoff games of just. Some really, really slick football. But of course, there was some controversy about this goal because it certainly looks like from all angles we saw that Mosquera is offside to score that goal. However, I think the soccer gods responded in kind, which we'll catch up with in a minute. But there's many people saying that Mosquera goal certainly looked to be offside that knocked Philly out.
Seattle and LAFC featured. We talked a little bit about how Nico Ladero, indicated at the start of the playoffs that he was leaving. There was a report that came out the day of the match that Raul Ruiz Diaz wants to go back to Universitario in Peru, which for whatever reason came out on the day of this match.
Nothing gets you pumped for a semifinal like hearing your star striker wants out. Yeah,
So they had this feels like a familiar script by now. Big saves from Maxine Crippo.
Mm-hmm.
Some decisions that make the home team tear their hair out.
Yeah.
In this one, I felt that that Seattle had some opportunities. And certainly Rusnak. That shot that goes off the post from Rusnak could have really changed things. But it is a 1-0 result with Denny Bouanga doing Denny Bouanga things.
Bastard. And, you know, all things being equal, like just to give them their fair shake, although I'm contractually obligated to not say nice things about the Sounders, I really did feel like they were hard done by in this match. I think that there were 5 or 6 calls at least that either should have gone their way, or whether that's just a foul given or a card given to LAFC, it really did. It was quite bad. That being said, I felt like Seattle kind of played this game of just like kind of waiting for something organic to open up. Against LAFC, and as we've seen, that's just a real hard way to beat LAFC. Like you've got to take the game to them, and I think in the second half you saw a few changes, and the Sounders changed their approach, and they certainly did put more pressure on. But just that final ball was not there, and so as ever, it's hard to say a team is hard done by when they like don't really significantly threaten. And, of course, as you mentioned, the times when they did, Maxime Crippo was there doing Maxime Crippo things.
Amazing. There's a one where he just, like, palm saved it away.
Yeah.
And certainly a game changer in that opportunity. Houston LAFC was very similar to me. I keep catching the 1-0 through extra.
Oh, Houston SKC.
I addressed that one briefly. I only had the one note on it anyway. Do you have further that you wanted to say about Houston SKC?
No, I didn't. I just forgot. I thought you were, when you were like Houston LAFC, I was like, they didn't play him. Yes, they did. That just happened later. Just hadn't moved my notes up. I'm back.
Herrera scored a goal, and in Pulido was had a shot cleared off the line with some people wondering it was a handball. Those were the notes out of Houston SKC.
Yeah.
Houston LAFC, this was a team that also, you know, we had seen them go all the way to the final and win against Inter Miami in the US Open Cup. This is a team that could have pushed further. There's no doubt about it. You had this Hollingshead. You had a great goal from Hollingshead to start, and it really feels like a very similar script of LA going up by a goal and then being very. It's not even defense. Like it's not boring necessarily, but it's just like in this case, it was like you couldn't even say that Houston was pressing, because they were before the second goal comes in, it felt like LA still had a lot of the attack going on. There was little that Houston was able to generate.
No, it's true, and I just think positionally LAFC, I mean, they do just about everything right, but players in midfield positions, defensive positions, just are always in the right place to read the play and cut off the angles, and so you know, we've seen Houston how many times have this really slick passing game, and LAFC was just able to completely break that up without sort of, you know, bunkering. And then, of course, Escobar had a very unfortunate own goal, which is like, you got to slide in and try to save that, but he just knocks it into his own net. It, for me, it was like, it was a very noble fight. It just never really felt like Houston realistically was going to get past LAFC, you know, like Houston on their night are fantastic, but nothing felt off about this LAFC side. So, I can't say this one was too surprising, and unfortunately it was not as entertaining to watch as the Cincinnati Columbus one, because both teams are so defensively good. Just there was a lot of like a quick break and then the other team intercepts and then they give it away, and it was just kind of like a bit bogged down, and a bit more of a chess match than sort of a run and gun one. But it was a pretty solid performance from LAFC, and it's hard to argue their place in the final.
I keep watching the chess matches. Naturally, it's Cincinnati Columbus that I missed. And I feel, it's okay. It's not like that was a particularly long one. You probably could have shut the match off at halftime when Cincinnati was leading 2-0 and been like, "That's it. Mm-hmm. That's all I need to see."
What could possibly go wrong? They asked. Yeah, this one felt like a real like turning of the screw kind of moment. You know, for a game that very early on, I think it was like less than 15 minutes in, Budpenza capitalizes on a really bad giveaway from the Crew and immediately slots it over to Vasquez, who's just perfectly there and gets it in from a really sharp angle. But I mean, the Crew are just relentless. Like, there's just like waves of attack where it's like every player is forward. And Cincinnati, like, they held their own, but it felt like the counters were few and far between. And of course, right before the first half, there's a free kick on the edge of the box that is left for Acosta, who just perfectly curves it in. Up and around everyone. Watching it in slow motion is something to behold, as like the seas part for this perfectly placed ball. So yeah, 2-0.
How often do you see a free kick played short?
Not a ton. But if you've got Acosta on your side, I think a little bit more. So it's 2-0 at the half. And then it just starts to go downhill. It hurts a little every time I see Julian Gressel in a Crew uniform.
Yeah.
I heard that apparently Wilfred Nancy calls him his little Beckham, which I was like, I don't know that he loves that nickname. I mean, he might love part of that nickname, but Julian Gressel, of course, just comes in and immediately starts serving dimes and just spraying them in as he does. And then I think he gets one in that comes off of Alvis Powell, actually, for an own goal. And then you can just see Columbus have this sense where it's like their pupils dilate and they smell blood in the water. And 85 minutes, just some mayhem in the box. Diego Rossi finds it. So it's 2-2 going into added time. And then
before we get into added time, I just want to take this moment to say that the MLS was investigating comments of racial abuse. I understand. I should double check this, but from the fans regarding Alvis Powell and that own goal, that fucking sucks, dude.
That sucks. None of that. I had not heard that. Shit.
No, thank you on that. Never okay to say that, and just fucking lay off your own guy. He's your own guy. What the fuck?
Well put. I agree. And especially a guy who's like busted his ass to fill in for multiple injuries and a suspended player. Like, what a thankless fucking job.
Online racist abuse has no place in our world or our league, says MLS Player Association 2 days ago. And MLS Major League Soccer unequivocally condemns racism and hate, is committed to supporting Alvis Powell and anyone in our league faced with racial abuse, cooperating with law enforcement to identify the individuals responsible.
Yeah, I hope. Speaking of having books thrown, I hope that is another opportunity where people have the opportunity to do that. Damn.
I wanted to make sure that got addressed.
Yeah, no, that's super important.
You are correct. It's 2-2. We head into extra time. This is, as you say, it had been, everything had started to come apart, but there was still, you know, you're still heading into extra time. You're still at home. The atmosphere, outstanding.
Yeah.
However,
it's like it's minutes into the second added time, and Ramirez is there, stabs one in, you know, and I feel like it's, you know, credit to Columbus for coming back to win this one. It really did feel like a tactical masterclass from Wilfred Nancy. His ability to dig his team out of holes. I mean, they dominate games, but even when they go down, I mean, you're 2-0 down at halftime to Cincinnati in TQL Stadium. They're Supporter Shield winners, and Columbus played with absolutely no fear. Like, it was just like, all right, okay, what's the assignment? Score 3 goals. Let's do this. And, of course, it wasn't quite as easy as that, but you really started to see fitness play a role. I know during the broadcast there were some questions about Lucho Acosta said, like, he could stay on even though he'd clearly been limping and basically didn't run for the final 15 minutes of the first 90, and they kept him in. And, I mean, he was outside of the very last few minutes of the second added time basically stationary because he couldn't run. And not to say that that's entirely his fault, but it's things like that that build into the larger picture of, like, if your team needs a goal and you're the MVP, and yes, you can deliver goals on a silver platter, but if you can't run and you can't, like, bust a gut to win, you need to have the humility to say, I'm the tank's empty, coach. Because what they really needed was a goal, not to make it to penalties. That you only make it to penalties if you get the goal. So there was that,
right.
That, and of course the Miazga suspension I don't think helped them, but it really did just kind of look like a fitness thing. I mean, that second added time, Columbus had just started to run circles around Cincinnati, and they were gassed. And it really just felt like Columbus was there to put them out of their misery, which they did. But I don't know. Overall, like, given where Cincinnati has been, how do you feel like this? Do you feel like this is a disappointment for them? Or, I mean,
no,
obviously,
no.
They are disappointed, but, you know, like, in the big picture of things.
I think in big picture, you got to look at, are the pieces going to stay together? Mm. That would be a reason to be disappointed. But, yeah, from where they've been to the fact that they won a trophy, the fact that they were pretty high up there pretty much the whole time, like, that was, I have no, I would say that this is almost unfortunate because they've been good for a season or two now.
Mm-hmm.
To say that this has exceeded expectations, because, you know, it's not wrong either to suggest that they should be ambitious and dream of more. But I think that it was a great season, and you've got to look at it as going up and up.
I agree, and I don't think not winning the double should be a thing to be disappointed about, you know, especially still like a relatively young club. It's obviously remarkable when teams do it, but it's pretty rare we see Supporter Shield winners also take MLS Cup. Obviously it does happen, but it was a big task. Now, of course, speaking of big tasks, we now have it. To me, it feels like the cream has risen to the crop. We've got Columbus versus LAFC this Saturday in the final. All of these things said about all of these teams, who do you got for this one?
Not to ride only on vibes, but like this is my point about, you know, teams I could have saw in the final. I said, like, what stories do I see sort of culminating in this push to the final? Not just because they beat the Whitecaps, not just for any particular reason. I don't want to see LAFC repeat. I have been really excited to see what's been going on with Columbus. As Vancouver fans, sad to see Gressel. I'm sure Montreal fans see what Wilfred Nancy is doing and thinking, what if he stuck, or what if we were able to
hold
him?
We could have had it all.
But that has been a joy to watch.
Yeah.
And I think that especially compared to the fact that a lot of the LAFC games have been high pressure, the high gravity affairs. Mm. I would love to see these two teams come together and see some things get knocked loose. I desire I want to see them bring the running gun out of LA because they have it.
Yeah.
And I hope that should be an exciting one to watch. What are you looking at here? Who do you got?
Good question. No, I agree with everything that you said. I'm team MLS. I want a good, clean match. I want some fireworks. I mean, I think the best setup for this is that we just saw Columbus go down 2-0 away to a very good team. And now they're going to be in their home court against the best in the West and former MLS Cup champions. So the stage is set. You know, LAFC scores an early goal, maybe even two. Columbus is not out of it, especially at home. That being said, I can also see a game where Columbus goes up early and hangs on, and LAFC, you know, gets a cheeky header in the dying moments. In my heart, yes, I want Columbus to win, because I agree, even though, of course, there's some slightly bitter feelings towards LAFC. It's just not the most interesting story to be like, oh, they won again. They will absolutely deserve it if they do. And I think that the weird thing about LAFC is maybe they're slightly favored as like not able to finish the job here against Columbus. I absolutely think LAFC has it in their locker. But there's just something about Wilfred Nancy and the way he sets up teams and watching them, turn the screw on Cincinnati. I think LAFC has definitely more fitness and availability on their side. But if there's any team that can stop this LAFC side, it's Columbus. And please, God, let it be Columbus.
Who do you think is winning MLS Final MVP, Crippo or Schulte?
Oh, it's hard to not see it going to Bawanga. Let's be real here. Both of those goalkeepers would certainly deserve it. I know I've said it before, but this playoffs, the goalkeeping, every single team, just I think all the best goalkeepers were on display and had some really incredible performances as well. I'm super happy as a former small-time goalkeeper. It's been a joy to watch. And, you know, a player like Schulte, who's what, 22, 23? Just playing out of his skin. Maxime Crepeau coming back from that injury. It's been really, really good stuff. But I feel like Bawanga, it just feels like Bawanga's not done doing Bawanga things, you know?
There was a time, I feel, in MLS where defenders were undervalued. And in the transfer market, and I don't think teams were playing particularly good defense. Like you were consistently seeing teams get beaten on the far post all the time.
Yeah.
You were seeing lots of like similar to what you said about the referees. I don't necessarily look at one particular bad defense spot and be like, oh, the league is garbage, because you'll see howlers in any league, but like. I think that the defense used to be significantly worse than it is now in recent seasons. I think that we've seen a lot of great defensive displays from a lot of different teams
mm-hmm.
in the playoffs. Which isn't necessarily like, this is the thing, is to talk about like LAFCB smothering or whatever, and to think that like they have like a lightning bolt of a player in Bawanga, who I don't even necessarily think has been limited in his ability, you know.
No,
it's not that they've been telling him not to do it, but he's just able to create a lot out of challenging situations, or create a lot for himself, which is what makes part of what makes him must see is
that,
a talent.
That and his arms and legs look like tree trunks. Let's see. Big, strong lad, as they say.
I was also going to say Cincinnati has 23 players under contract. And the main it's Junior Moreno, Santiago Arias, Dominic Baggi, Ray Gattis, and Yuya Kubo is who they have to be talking to about potential renewals. They did not out of contract and or option declined. Also, MLSsoccer.com suggests they should defend. They should. They may be getting requests for Alvaro Barreal or Brandon Vasquez. So
yeah,
some stuff to do according to Jonathan Segal of MLSsoccer.com. But I wouldn't necessarily say that they are. They're facing a era change.
No, and that's truly, I think, a positive sign for a very good MLS club is where you can say, like, you know, yeah, they're probably going to lose at least one really good player. They've been through that before. They'll get, I'm sure, a very healthy transfer fee for it. And they're only going to have to, their off-season work is just to supplement the roster and maybe fill in one big spot. That's a great place to be. You know, like, that is not where DC United is right now. If you're going into the offseason with a core of 22, 23 players and just sort of a case of locking down some contracts and knowing, like, this is more or less the side you want to go with, I think if you're Pat Noonan and you can sleep at night going, you might lose Barreal. Like, it sucks for sure, but, you know, they'll get a stupid amount of money for him if he goes, and they've obviously got a really good scouting network and made very good decisions about how to fill in those gaps where needed. So I think if you're a Cincinnati fan, yeah, you're still kind of licking the wounds and thinking what could have been, but you have to be looking at next season going, already we're still head and shoulders above a lot of teams and nothing's even happened yet. You know, like, the offseason has just begun and we've got signings to make, but I still think they're a significantly stronger side in the East than a lot of their counterparts.
MLS Cup 2022, the defining image at the end of it was Gareth Bale waltzing into the group project at the last possible moment and in scoring the MLS Cup winning goal. That was the image, both in a sincere sense and in the that's so MLS-y sense. What image, GIF, or meme? Let's try and reach into the future with this. What mm-hmm. image, GIF, or meme will you be remembering?
When we talk next.
When we talk next.
I think it will be Julian Gressel firing a free kick into the crowd where a dazed Gareth Bale will be sitting, who will accidentally head it in to win the game for LAFC. Somehow, he'll just appear he'll apparate in the stands and it'll somehow, that man bun will flick it in. That's my vote.
Mark Dos Santos gets sent off.
Or Maxime Crepeau gets a game-winning goal from the half.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, no, he goes in on set plays near the end, so he could conceivably score a goal in this match. That is a very possible thing.
Crepeau versus Cucho midfield duel.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think there's going to be some tackles. I think there's probably going to be a goal or two. I think we're set up for a good final.
No doubt. Until we meet again, once on the other side of the last kicks of the MLS season, where can we find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at That's So MLS. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, all the other podcast platforms. That's So MLS. Please rate, review, and subscribe. Also, thatsomls.com. Where can we find you?
You can find me online at www.team-bates.com. You can find me at most places with some variation of Team Bates including Team Bates at beastguide.social or Team Batesy on Threads, Team Batesy on Instagram, Team Bates at mastodon.social. Yes, social. Anywhere in the wild world. Thank you for listening. I'm excited for a big damn game this weekend.
It's gonna be a time.
And until we thought we covered this before, but if you don't get sent off, if you don't get sent off for receiving 3 yellow cards in a game, also then don't get suspended for 3 games for making silly decisions.
Just eat your fucking pizza in peace.